Our next speaker is David Price with co-authors Salen and Kassler, entitled DNA Marker Diversity of Big Blue Stem Populations in the North Central and Northeastern USA.
Okay, thank you. I'm happy to be here to present this research today. This was research done at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in collaboration with the U.S. Dairy Forage Research Center in Madison and the Big Flats Plants Material Center in Corning, New York. The objectives of this research were to measure among and within population genetic diversity in populations of big blue stem. Big blue stem is a native prairie species in the United States. And the populations that we were looking at were three groups. First, natural populations of big blue stem in the state of Wisconsin, natural populations of big blue stem in the northeastern United States, and then currently released cultivars and accessions. The rationale behind this was that by measuring the genetic diversity of these populations, we could get an idea of what genetic variation was out there and use this information to potentially lead to improved cultivars and a better understanding of how this diversity can be maintained. As a bit of introduction, big blue stem is a perennial C4 grass. It's typically an outcrossing species, and its native distribution is throughout most of the eastern United States, east of the Rocky Mountains. As you can see on the map, they're covering quite a number of states. It was one of the main species of the tall grass prairie, in some places covering 80% of the species in that area. Its current uses today are as a high-quality forage species. It can be used during the low growth periods of cool season grasses during the summer months. But it also has potential as a biofuel feedstock. It has high digestibility characteristics that would be valuable for that, and also can produce relatively high biomass yields on relatively low inputs. So most of the current germplasm originates in the Great Plains region, stretching from North Dakota down towards Texas, with a few cultivars coming out of the states of Michigan and Indiana and New York. Most of these cultivars were composites of a limited collection of plants from a specific site. Most of them have seen very little improvement, if at all, one or two generations of improvement. So there's a lot of regions of the distribution of big blue stem that aren't currently incorporated into the current germplasm. So that was one of our first objectives of this research, was to cover some of those unrepresented areas, the first of those being the state of Wisconsin. In the state of Wisconsin, the southwestern portions of the state, stretching up towards the northwestern portions, this area was once interconnected savanna, being that border between the true prairie and where the forest begins. And this area was once interconnected, and we suspect there was quite a bit of gene flow. Big blue stem, it was one of the major species there and is still found throughout the area. For our purposes, we collected seed at 34 state natural areas and wildlife areas throughout the state, and these collections represented three plant hardiness zones and six ecoregions. Ecoregions are defined as a geographic area that's ecologically unique from the areas surrounding it. In addition to Wisconsin, our collaborators made collections throughout the northeastern United States. And this area has a bit of a different land history than either Wisconsin or the Great Plains. Grasslands aren't typically one of the main ecosystems known in this area, but they are known. They do exist throughout that area, especially historically. Some of the early European explorers that came to this area described these areas. One of those is Daniel Denton, who in 1670 wrote a brief description of New York, and he describes large tracts of grasslands and describes the grass as being as tall as a man. That grass that he spoke of has since been identified as having been big blue stem. A major difference between this area and Wisconsin or the Great Plains is these grasslands are geographically isolated from each other due to the geography and ecology of that area. And so it's suspected that there was very little gene flow amongst these populations and likely have been isolated for many thousands of years. In this area, we made 24 collections in six states, and these collections represented four hardiness zones and 11 ecoregions. So you can see from the map here that our collections represent quite a bit of the geography of the United States, and while each being fairly unique, the cultivars being in orange, those from Wisconsin being in red, and then those from the Northeast being in blue. And we suspect that there's probably been very little gene flow, but these areas are separated enough that there's been very little gene flow between them. So in order to measure the genetic diversity, we used amplified fragment length polymorphism markers. And these are a DNA marker that basically fragments the DNA into small pieces and then amplifies those pieces and compares the differences in those fragments that are amplified between samples. We used 9 AFLP primer combinations, and those were then scored using the statistical package R. From this, we found 417 polymorphic loci that were used in all of the subsequent analysis. The first analysis that I conducted was doing a principal coordinate analysis, and this analysis basically takes the information from all 417 of those markers and summarizes it in two dimensions that can be visualized. This figure here shows that analysis and highlights each of the three groups in separate colors, those from Wisconsin being in red, those from the Northeast being in blue, and then the release cultivars and accessions in orange. A few things to take away from this figure is first that we see that each of these groups appear to be genetically unique, each covering their own separate area, while at the same time they are overlapping, especially the release cultivars and accessions with those from Wisconsin and those from the Northeast. I hypothesize that the reason that we see this overlap of the cultivars with the other groups is that germplasm from the released cultivars and accessions has likely been transferred to these areas. Most, as we saw, all the current germplasm is there, and as people have seed, that's where it's moved from. It's from the Great Plains to these outlying areas. In addition to that analysis, I conducted an analysis of molecular variants, which partitions the genetic variance that we observe amongst the different variables. The first table here shows how that variance is partitioned among the separate groups, and we see that a significant portion, although small, is partitioned among the three groups, and then 10% of that variance is partitioned among populations within those groups, and then finally the major portion of the variance is due to plants within populations. This is to be expected. As an outcrossing species, we typically find that most all of the variation is found within populations rather than among populations. If I break that down into the individual groups and include ecoregions as one of the variables, we see that in the state of Wisconsin, a very small yet significant portion of the variance is contributable to ecoregions, and then only 3% is the variance is contributable to populations within ecoregions. This is suggesting that those populations in Wisconsin are fairly homogeneous, and there's not a lot of differences among those different populations. In contrast, in the Northeast, we see that a small amount of the variance still goes toward ecoregions, but we see that 20% of the variance is contributable to populations within ecoregions. So this is suggesting that those populations in the Northeast, there's quite a bit of difference between those, which is a striking contrast compared to Wisconsin. I hypothesize that this is likely due to that land history of those areas, and that while Wisconsin, the populations are rather fragmented now, but it's been a relatively short amount of time that those populations have been fragmented, whereas in the Northeast, these populations have been isolated probably for thousands of years and has allowed for greater genetic divergence to occur over time. Looking at the cultivars, we see that relatively small amounts at 2% and 4% of the variation is contributable to among ecoregions and populations. I suspect that those small numbers are likely due to the fact that many of these populations were composites of a large number of sites and all combined together, and possibly due to this seed being grown up together and thus decreasing the genetic divergence between these groups. In addition to that, I looked at how the spatial variation affected this genetic diversity that was observed using a Mantell test, which computes a correlation between the genetic distance and geographic distance. In the state of Wisconsin, we see that correlation is extremely low at 0.04 and was not significant. This agrees with what we saw in the previous slide, that those populations are relatively homogeneous and where they're located doesn't affect that genetic diversity. In the Northeast, though, we see that the correlation is quite a bit higher at 0.21 and is highly significant. So this is suggesting that as those populations are farther apart, that we see a greater genetic difference between those populations. So a couple of implications from this research. First, we see that these natural populations from Wisconsin and the Northeast represent unique genetic variation that's not observed in the current cultivars from the Great Plains. This presents several breeding opportunities. The first is to develop regionally adapted varieties for the Wisconsin and the Northeast that could potentially perform better than those cultivars from the Great Plains in those areas. And in addition, there's likely favorable new alleles in those populations that could be used to improve the current cultivars. In addition to this, there are several implications for prairie restoration. Big bluestem is one of the commonly seeded species in prairie restoration. And the question of what seeds should be used for these restorations is a common one. From our results here, we see that the regional variation may vary on what region you're thinking about. Within the state of Wisconsin, those populations are relatively homogeneous, and so it would seem to collect the diversity you would want for a prairie restoration would be fairly easy. In contrast, in the Northeast, where there's a lot of differences among populations, that's a more difficult question to decide, okay, if we're going to do a restoration here, where should we collect seed from? And finally, in addition to that, we can see that not all local sources of seed are equal. It appears that there already has occurred contamination from germplasm from the Great Plains into some of these natural populations. And so that's something that needs to be taken into consideration when making these decisions, although that's a very difficult thing to measure for most people considering a prairie restoration. So in conclusion, I'll suggest that the maintenance of these populations and genetic diversity in big bluestem is important. Considering it as a forage species as we seek to improve big bluestem, this is genetic diversity that we'll want to have available. And as most prairie species, all our germplasm comes straight from these natural grasslands. So this diversity can continue to be maintained in these natural grasslands, but consideration of seed continuing to enter these is something that needs to be considered and protected. In addition to that, continued seed collection and maintenance of these populations will be essential to be able to identify this diversity and to use it effectively. And with that, I'll conclude and take any questions. Yeah, go ahead. Well, that's a good question, and I'll say that even the sites in Wisconsin, I mean, to describe all of these as prairie remnants, I think would be an overstatement, and especially in the Northeast. These are grasslands that are occurring there, and I can't comment specifically on any one site. Those were sites done by our collaborators there. But grasslands, I mean, have been a major portion of the ecosystem in the Northeast. Although not a major portion, all these grasslands are relatively small and not comparable at all to anything in the Great Plains or those regions. But there are small grasslands that have been there historically, and there's a lot of descriptions of those areas having been there those grasslands having been there for quite some time. Yeah. So they were distinct by their individual fingerprints. So each marker was considered as an individual loci, and then those were compared between each other. No, that wasn't something that we did as far as that was part of our objectives with this. In Wisconsin? Well, the average yield is relatively low. It'd probably be about 2 or 3 tons per acre.
One more quick one.
What's a population? Well, I defined a population as as a specific collection site. So all seed coming from a single prairie or collect grassland, it would be considered a population. Yep.
Okay, thank you.